Long before Alec Murdoch made the town famous when he went on trial for the deaths of his wife and son, Walterboro, South Carolina was the site of a disappearance that barely made a blip in the newspaper. Yet it's still talked about today, like a ghost story or a legend. This is the story of the Walterboro boys, the teenage friends who only had each other until they lost even that. Hi friends, I'm Katie, and this is Katie Does Crime. Thank you for joining me for the first time if you're new here, and hello to the usual rapscallions and reprobates. Please consider subscribing or joining me on Patreon if you'd like to hear more true crime stories. Today's case was recommended to me in the comments by @BrianMurfitt, knowing that I have an interest in missing persons. These older, unsolved cases are always hard because you're left with such a sense of helplessness, but I also think it's important to not let them get completely lost to time. I hope we can keep cold cases like this a little warmer by remembering them. It was November 1st, 1972, in Walterboro, South Carolina, a little town that calls itself the front porch of the Lowcountry. It was originally founded in 1783 by the Walter brothers, Paul and Jacob. The families of local rice farmers would catch malaria on their swampy plantations in the summer, and Walterboro was meant to be an escape from that. It's about 48 miles west of Charleston, one of my favorite places in America. And yes, it's where Alec Murdoch's trial was, if you follow that case. On that day in 1972, Mildred Crosby dropped her son, James Allen, off at Colleton Junior High School at around 8 a.m. His good friend, William Billy Edward Huff, was being dropped off by his mom, Alberta, at the same time. The two were a couple of years apart in age, 16 and 14, but Billy was the only friend James Allen seemed to have at school. Both had huge families, though. James Allen was one of 12 children, and Billy was one of 9. I like to think that they at least had built-in friends at home. Neither boy was very good in school. The local newspaper called them slow learners, with grades ranging from fair to poor. They didn't really participate in any after-school activities, but they did both have good attendance records. That's why it was especially strange that neither was recorded present in class that day. And when their parents went to pick them up that afternoon, they were nowhere to be seen. Billy's sister says he was caring and loving, the type of older brother who would hold her hand to keep her from walking into the road on their way to the store. Billy's mom said he was a good boy, and so was James. So she got someone to call the sheriff the moment they weren't where they were supposed to be. The sheriff asked the public for help with information, but no one ever came forward. Billy's mom said she stood outside at the road that night and looked for him off in the darkness, but he never came back. There was absolutely no motive for murder that anyone could think of. The sheriff says they conducted an intense search, wading through creeks and flying an airplane overhead in the area. The moms of the boys said the search could have been more extensive. Of course, the moms always say that. A detective on the case said, "You would expect parents to have that type of reaction, and it's understandable." But whether or not the authorities did all they could, the media at the time definitely did not. The case wasn't big news. There were a couple of local articles written, a couple of photographs published. The boys weren't even discussed as part of the same article, like the articles didn't mention that they disappeared together. People just thought that they were runaways. It's sad how some missing people become all we can talk about, and some just become yesterday's story. The sheriff's department closed the books on the boys in 1973 after 13 months on the case. But then on April 23, 1984, their remains were found only about a quarter mile from the school. It had been almost 12 years since their disappearance. A man named Barry Collup found them. I saw newspaper articles that referred to him as Collup and Collum, but I found a 1983 South Carolina Aeronautics Commission report that refers to Barry Collup, so I think that's probably correct. Anyway, Barry worked at the Walterboro Municipal Airport, now known as Lowcountry Regional Airport. Because he was a manager there, he had access to the remote areas of the property. He and his friend James Webster were out in a swampy area of the airport in April 1984, 75 yards from a taxiway that was rarely used, following a game trail with a dog. They stumbled onto a boot sticking out of a pile of leaves and kicked it. James said something like, "Wouldn't it be funny if we found a bone in the boot?" And then they did find a bone in the boot and some clothes. One of them said that the clothes were still in such good condition that you could have taken those shirts and washed them and they would be better than the clothes some people wear. You know, because it was the 70s and everything was made of polyester. Those clues led to the sheriff's department being able to identify the Walterboro boys. The bodies didn't appear to have been buried. Like, it didn't seem like someone had dug a hole in the dirt to put them in. They were just covered in plants and leaves, so they might have just been killed and then left to the elements on top of the ground. That part of the airport was behind a fence and a locked gate, and most people weren't allowed back there. The man who found the bodies said, "It is a very remote, untraveled area of the airport. It was really a miracle that we found them at all." The local sheriffs thought there had to be foul play involved. The county coroner said, "I just can't see two young fellows going in there and just lying down and dying. They were so close to actual civilization that if something had gone wrong and they needed help, they would have been right there. Like I said, they were only a quarter mile from school." Authorities wondered if the boys might have left school for Bullet Hill, an area near the airport where machine guns were tested during World War II. The U.S. Air Force had used the airport as a training facility in the 40s, but the military buildings were meant to be temporary and had long since been decommissioned. Plum trees grew thick around the paths between the airbase runways, making it hard for anyone to get around back there. No wonder the bodies went undiscovered for so long. Days after the initial discovery, a local businessman donated a bulldozer to cut a proper road to the site. Only some rib and backbones were found there at first, and the search team had to be careful not to disturb the scene too much when clearing the underbrush to look for more. But an arm bone, two leg bones, a jaw bone, and a pelvic bone were eventually found. It was a good start, an amazing discovery, all things considered. But authorities thought they would need to find the boys' skulls before they had any chance of knowing what happened to them. James Allen's mom said, "I was still hoping until Saturday." He was one of 12 children, like I said, and her fourth son to pass on before her. Two of her sons had drowned, and the other one died when he rolled his truck. But she had still been waiting for James Allen to be found alive and wouldn't let anyone spoil that for her. Not even her husband, who told the kids that James Allen was dead. He himself had died the year before the remains were found. But when the county coroner asked James Allen's mom to identify the boot and the blue flowered shirt found at the airport, her hopes were dashed. That's what he'd been wearing the day he disappeared. Billy's mom said that she had also hoped he was still alive and well somewhere. She said, "I'd be more satisfied if I could find out what really happened to them." At least according to the newspaper articles that exist, the skulls were never found. A local woman said in a blog post that the skulls were eventually returned to the families, and the families were told the boys died from gunshots, but we have to take that with a grain of salt. The bones that were found in April 1984 were sent to the Medical University of South Carolina for tests in May. Sadly, they led to no new leads. So the remains were released to the families in late October 1984, and the boys both finally had funeral services in November 1984. Finally, they made the news in places like Florida and Missouri, if only to announce that the boys were officially gone. The detective assigned to the case in its later years, the years after it had seemingly grown cold, was named Steve Basil, and he seemed like one of those guys who takes it to heart when his cases can't be solved. He grew up in the area and was a junior in high school when the two boys went missing from the junior high down the road. He kept a photo of Billy in his office and added a sketch of the airport to it once the bodies were found. He said, "I see those boys' pictures when I go to sleep at night. I think about what I've done each day and wonder if I've missed something. I wonder what to go through the next day. I haven't been able to get this out of my mind." So what actually happened to the Walterboro boys? Well, one of the detectives on the case said that without much information, local people at the time were letting their imaginations get away with them. They were proposing wild theories that upset the families. The woman from the blog post that mentioned the skulls said she heard the story of the Walterboro boys around town when she was growing up, but it was more of a legend or a ghost story. Whoever told her the story said there were three boys. She says she later happened to marry someone who was related to one of the boys and talked to people in the town about the case. Some of them said that drugs were being smuggled out of the airport at the time. They said maybe the boys saw something they shouldn't have, that kids used to go to that spot in the woods all of the time to hang out when skipping school. And to that point, a local businessman came forward in 1987 and said that he was skipping school one day in 1974 and ran through those woods with friends. They were trying to get away from a school administrator who had seen them take off across the street. As they got to the airport area, they smelled something awful. They had stumbled upon the bodies, which had the heads and all still intact at the time. But they were all too afraid to say anything. You know what it's like being a kid and thinking you might get blamed. But just think, if one of them had been able to muster the courage at the time, the Walterboro boys' bodies could have been found just 2 years after their deaths. There could have been evidence left behind. The press and Standard newspaper ran the story in 1987 about what the school skippers had seen that day and about the regret they felt about not speaking up in 1974. The article said that students should know, if they ever see something out of the ordinary, they should tell a school counselor, that they won't get into trouble even if they're cutting class. The last detective to work the case says he doesn't have much hope the case will ever be closed. Apart from someone wanting to get something off their chest and some deathbed confession, it's unlikely that any new evidence will ever surface. DNA testing won't really help anything because they already know who the victims were, and there was nothing from the scene that seemed to belong to any kind of suspect. Apparently, the clothes the boys were found in were eventually returned to the families anyway. They're not even in evidence anymore. We know that murders are usually committed by someone familiar to the victim, but it could have also been that the boys were just in the wrong place at the wrong time. A skull was found in Ireland Creek behind the Farmers and Merchants Bank the year after the boys disappeared, but it didn't belong to either of the boys, so that makes people wonder if a serial killer was prowling around at the time. It feels like maybe this case wasn't taken seriously enough at all. It seems like they were just viewed as runaways who would come home eventually. A newspaper article from 1987 says that the woods near the airport were searched in the 70s, but if that's true, it seems like the search wasn't nearly extensive enough. In 2020, Billy's mom told Walterboro Live that he might have been gone for a while, but it still hurts. She said, "I think there's someone out there who knows what happened, but they're not going to tell. I just want someone out there to come forward and tell the truth so I can lay my son to rest."
Unanswered questions nearly five decades later, a Walterboro family asking for closure after their loved one disappeared in the early 70s.
Our Rachel Ellis met them in Walterboro. Rachel, how did this cold case resurface?
A viewer and distant family member connected to this case sent us an email that said two boys went missing back in 1972 and were found dead more than 12 years later. And tonight, they're asking for the public's help.
It's a quiet Walterboro neighborhood, buzzing with the sound of nature. But a Walterboro family says it's too quiet.
That's all I have of him right here, and I still love my baby.
Quiet because of the silence they say they've received for decades.
Somebody come tell me why they did it and what happened. I never have found out what happened to my son.
This is Alberta Fillers at her home. She says it was just like any other day.
He was a good child. He went to school. And the day he disappeared, it was on November the 1st of 72.
Before she saw her 14-year-old son for the last time.
It was awful. Knowing my child was gone, didn't know where he was at. And he had never done that before.
She says the remains of her son, William Edward Huff, along with another boy named James Allen Crosby, were found at the airport. Almost 12 years later.
And they was friends. I never met the boy. All I know, they was friends at school.
William's sister was 7 years old at the time of his disappearance.
He was sweet, caring, loving. He'd do anything for you. I remember me and him walking down the store, going to the store, he holding my hand, telling me don't get in the road.
Charlene Huff says she's talking about this painful past because it still hurts. But her grieving mother says she holds this photo to ease the pain.
I feel like I'm holding him in my lap. He's there. He's with me all the time. He's in spirit. He's with me.
She says this way, it's never too quiet.
And the Carlton County Sheriff's Office confirmed the two victims' names. They tell us for years, deputies followed up on all information and thoroughly examined every piece of evidence in this case to bring this family justice. But the Huff family says it wasn't enough. Rachel Ellis, ABC News 4.
And the Sheriff's Office declined an interview for the story. We were told investigators want to bring closure for the family. They're asking anyone with information to come forward and call 843-549-2211.
A 50-year remembrance memorial was held in Walterboro at the Colleton Museum in 2022. There's a YouTuber named Lamont at Large who visited a cemetery nearby and filmed Billy's grave. It says that his nickname was Bubba and that he died as he lived, a Christian. I hope he and James Allen are both resting peacefully. Thank you for tuning into my podcast episode. I'm just a true crime fan like you are, and I really appreciate you taking a chance on me. Please subscribe and tell a friend if you like spending this time together. You can also find me on YouTube in the flesh by searching Katie Does Crime.